Hey everyone, it's Tawny and Lisa with Recovery Rocks, and we are super excited to announce a new collaboration with our sponsor, Sober Dating. It is literally a dating app called Sober Dating.
It could not be easier.
It really couldn't be any easier. And to make it even cooler, you guys have an amazing opportunity to pre-order the app. The first 1,000 pre-orders get 6 months free membership with Sober Dating.
That is so fantastic.
And so you guys can head to the link in our show notes to learn more about how to pre-order. It's super easy to do. Lisa and I just did it, and we are so excited to be part of the Sober Dating movement.
Things I wish were available 17 years ago.
Exactly, but they're available now. So head to our show notes to learn more about Sober Dating and follow them at sober_dating.
Hey everybody, welcome to Recovery Rocks. I'm Lisa, and always so lucky to be here with...
Hey, it's Tawny. And we have a friend today.
Yes, we're excited.
But before we get to our special guest, we want to give a shout out again to our sponsor, Sober Dating, a fun new app, and make sure you do the pre-order because the first 1,000 people will get 6 months free membership. And so another cool thing that I love about this app is that they allow you to define what higher power means to you, which is, I think, such a nuanced, progressive approach to this, because I know in the recovery spaces, predominantly in 12-step, that's a very heated topic. Some people struggle with the word higher power or God or, the universe. It's so personal to each person. So I love that Sober Dating gives the user that space to express how they feel about higher power. So on that note, we are going to bring in our wonderful guest, She's married. Mrs. Breanne Davis.
Hi.
She is a, what's up, girl? She's joining us from LA. I feel jealous. Lisa and Breanne are in LA and I'm in New York.
Yes, but it's hot.
Yeah, you got to come hang.
I will.
Again.
So Breanne, I mean, her resume is so long, but I'm going to keep it brief. She's, writer, actor, podcaster, producer. She's a mom. She's gorgeous in this orange dress. She does so many things. But today, what we're going to chat about is sex and love addiction, because it's something that is just not talked about enough. And Breanne has this really, dare I say, fun way of talking about sex and love addiction. So welcome, Breanne.
Thank you. Yeah, it is fun. I mean, once you get through the withdrawal and the horrible behaviors, you get on another side where it's fun and you love life and you're appreciated and you're grateful and you're humble and you do have a God or a universe or a higher power. So yeah, I'm glad I talk about it in a fun way.
It's fun. Like your writing style is fun. You're on TikTok and like you find these engaging ways to talk about sex and love addiction. Whereas I feel like before I found you, I was reading about it more from an academic or clinical perspective, where yours is like, hey, I'm this person who's like, I used to do this thing and I don't anymore and I'm in recovery. And your TikToks are also really fun for writers. Like you talk about like writing advice and writing a book and promoting a book, and you just kind of, like I said, you do it all.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think about the sex and love addiction, nobody's talked about it. I mean, just me trying to find people to talk about it in my community, and what, there's 6% of the United States are sex and love addicts and nobody talks about it. That's 30 million people that have already said, I'm a sex and love addict. And I just want to break open the doors and say, yeah, I've done bad things. It doesn't make me a bad person. There is a way out of that destructive cycle of going for unavailable people or cheating or having one night stands or using porn and masturbation to soothe yourself. And, You know, so I try to make it fun and educational, but also entertaining. And that's my main goal. So I'm so glad that you love the TikToks. Sometimes I feel silly doing them. I'm like, what am I doing? I'm old. I shouldn't be on TikTok.
But it's fun. Like it's, I think that's the cool thing about just social media in general is that it takes these difficult, like you're using it to take these difficult conversations and make them conversational and approachable.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what my goal is. Even though at times I struggle myself because it's such a deadly, gnarly disease that there's so much shame and stigma. I mean, I know so many people that have committed suicide over this addiction, murdered somebody. I have a good friend that's in jail. I have another great friend that lost her 9 years in AA over a relationship. The number one reason people lose their sobriety in any other addiction is over relationships.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. I can see that. I know for me, I went into recovery and into AA as for alcohol and cocaine. But, you know, one of the things I discovered were, you know, obviously it's a very different story than yours, but one of the things that I discovered was that I could easily use and had in the past used sex, relationships, you know, in other people as a drug. You know, we don't think of it necessarily the same way because it's not something I, you know, threw up my nose or like, you know, downed a bottle of, but that doesn't mean, you know, it's that behavior and that people can be a drug for me if I'm not careful.
Yeah. I mean, falling in love gives off the same endorphins that cocaine does. It's scientifically proven. And it irritates me that these scientists or these sex therapists are coming out and saying you can't be addicted to sex and love. And it's like, how is that possible? Our first connection when we are born are to other people. It's not to drugs and alcohol. So if you do not have the healthy tools or the coping mechanisms to deal with your feelings or you come from trauma or molestation or any of those things, how are we, do we not get addicted to being abandoned because we don't feel worthy? Trying to find love to fill us and give us our self-worth. So I feel like society as a whole right now is running around like infants, trying to get people to love them, fill them, be my soulmate. And it's like, fuck that shit. Like, I'm my own soulmate. So I'm just saying, like, let's stop looking around for this outside person to complete us and let's complete ourselves. And that's what being in that program of sex and love addiction is like. It's about finding yourself love and stop using people as drugs.
So what do you think the argument is when you hear people saying sex and love addiction isn't real? What are they really saying?
Well, they're really saying that you can't get addicted to sex and love like a chemical addiction, that it's a progressive brain disease. It gets worse and worse. Just like a chemical addiction gets worse and worse, you need more alcohol, you need more drugs. But with a progressive brain disease, it's the same thing. You amplify. When I was at almost hitting my bottom, the things I was doing and putting myself in, the dangerous situations that I could have been murdered, I could have been kidnapped, I could have been sexually assaulted. You know, two people could have murdered themselves over me, those kind of situations, they amplify and get worse and worse and worse.
So something that I want to debunk right here, right here, right now.
Let's do it.
I'm also in recovery from sex and love addiction. And I went to a few meetings, but I really felt seen through memoir, films and certain shows. But as something that I noticed is that it's mostly men that are talking about sex and love addiction.
Yeah.
Which is, again, why I love your content, because it's a woman talking about it. So with that, there's this trope of sex addiction equals compulsively fucking strangers. That's what I thought for the longest time. I was like, oh, I don't have a sex problem. I'm not compulsively having sex with strangers. Because that's how it's presented in media. So I would love if you could, you know, debunk that and talk about what sex and love addiction actually is.
Yeah, I love this question. This is probably my favorite question because that is the reason I came out. you know, everybody that talks about sex addiction is a Tiger Woods or a husband that gets caught cheating and says he's a sex addict and goes to rehab, blah, blah, blah. I'm so tired of that narrative. So for me, and how I break it down easily, so there are people that compulsively go out and sleep with a bunch of people. I've never had a one-night stand. I haven't had many sexual partners, but I'm still a sex and love addict because I use my sexuality and sexual acts as manipulation, having power, having control over someone else. And I'm disconnected usually from my body during those acts. So you can be sex and love addict and be addicted to one specific person. That, or you can be addicted to porn and masturbation and one night stands and going online, swiping left and right, having multiple relationships at the same time, which is what I did. I would be getting out of a relationship, starting another one. So I was never alone and they would kind of overlap. So I was always lying and not telling the truth and having these secrets. And then on the love addiction side, it's about wanting to live in fantasy and not reality. Wanting to live out these dreams or like the movies or television, going back to that unavailable person that never shows up for you, being addicted to bad, toxic relationships. Having bad friendships is another way you can be a love addict, that codependent relationship, going after a friend that's never available, constantly searching for your person to fix you. So it's such a wide variety. And then on the other side of the addiction, there's sexual anorexia, where you have gotten hurt in the past or taken advantage of. So you sexually shut down and you stop dating and you stop having sex. And it's you mostly act inward with masturbation and porn because you're not with a person. So it's all these different ranges of, you know, behavioral issues that are under sex and love addiction.
Yes, I've experienced like so much of that. And then also just like needing that validation.
Yeah, the flirting and the intriguing constantly. Yes. Like as a woman, you walk down the street and wanting people to flirt with you and tell you you're beautiful or give you that attention. I say it's going outside and raping other people of their energy. Like, fill me. Give me my self-worth. Give me my self-worth. Exhausting.
It is exhausting. And I mean, you're in a relationship now. You're married. Yes. And, you know, like, so how does... We all three know, recovery, there's no end point, right? So, you know, do these things kind of, maybe these triggers or behaviors, do they show up now that you're in long-term recovery and with, you know, with the love of your life?
Yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, been with my husband 16 years. I have almost 12 years of recovery in sex and love addiction. So I started my program with somebody. So it's not like I went through recovery and then found this perfect person because we're all human and we're all flawed. I just got the healthy tools how to make a relationship work because I did love my husband and care about my husband. And I almost blew up our relationship when a mentor of mine died. I found myself 12 years ago, a mentor of mine died. I found myself 2 days later on location shooting a movie, starting to flirt and intrigue and do the things I did in my early 20s. And I thought, what is going on? I have a boyfriend at home that I love as much as I can love anybody and I care about, and I'm about to blow it up. So, but now after working on myself, going through the 9 months of withdrawal that I talk about in the book and very, very detailed how horrible it is. You know, we didn't have sex for the first year of my recovery. We lived together. It was very difficult. But yeah, now I have the tools and I don't look for my husband to fix me. And, you know, he is the love of my life, but he doesn't complete me. If he left me today, I would be sad. I would be devastated, but I wouldn't like be wanting to kill myself or commit suicide over a relationship, us ending. He does not complete me. Mm-hmm. He can't. It's incapable. It's a God-sized hole, right? That's what we say.
Wow. I feel like that's such a important distinction there. And that represents so much personal growth of like, you don't need each other. You want each other and you complement each other. That just sounds so healthy.
Yeah. And at first it sounded really boring. Yes, but it sounded boring,
it's
right?
It's not codependent.
But I used to think, wait, I'm not going to get high off another person. I'm not going to have the butterflies, the falling in love feeling, the first kiss feeling, all that stuff, not being able to flirt, not being able to intrigue. I said, oh my God, that's so boring. Like, I have to just be with someone, like, you know, but honestly, it's the most freeing place to be, to hold my own energy and be with someone that does the same. And we're not enmeshed or codependent. We help each other, but we don't fix each other.
Yes. On that note, I would love if we could also discuss limerence. You know, I love the word limerence. I feel like once I learned this word and what it meant, I felt so seen. And when I share it with people, they're like, whoa, I didn't know there was a word for that. So I'm just wondering if you could chat a little bit about limerence.
Well, how do you define it? Because I want to hear how you define it to people. I'm interested in that.
To me, it means it's often unrequited love, mm-hmm. unrequited obsession, where, you know, the limerent object is, you know, maybe it's someone in your life. It could also be like a celebrity or like a sick obsession with a celebrity where in your head you think that you like, I've never told anyone this. I used to stay single because there is a chance that I might run into John Mayer at a coffee shop.
I love it.
Well, isn't that fucked?
No, but it's funny because in the book I talk about, you know, seeing my schoolgirl crush in a meeting. And it was like, I was waiting for this celebrity to show up in Atlanta at my high school to like rescue me and we were meant to be together. Like, it's so funny.
So, yeah. So we've both had these limerent objects, if you will. So, Brianne, what does limerence mean to you?
Well, I mean, limerence means to me is the going into fantasy, you know, living in this alternate reality in your head that something is going to magically come and fix you. Some person that you're obsessing about is going to fix you and make you whole. And I think the difference between that and sex and love addiction is usually with a sex and love addict, we go after an unavailable person. There's some kind of interaction. It just doesn't stay a fantasy in your head. So you have the person in your life, you usually are like blurring the lines of some kind of relationship, but it's a push-pull and you keep going back to them. So I think that's the difference for me when I really think about it.
Yeah, it's also fascinating to me. And like, you know, we're both writers. Lisa's also a writer. Like, we're both obsessed with words. I think you'd have to be to write, right?
Yeah.
So when I learn a new word like that, it really set like it's really stands out because it's especially a word that lets you feel seen. Okay, so now I want to chat about our girl Roxanne.
Roxanne.
Exactly. You don't have to put out the red.
You don't have to put on the red light.
Yes. So I want to chat about Roxanne, who is the main character of your book. Secret Life of a Hollywood Sex and Love Addict, a Seductively Wild Ride to Self-Love. And this book just came out a couple months ago, right?
Yeah.
February. And so it's technically a novel.
Yes.
But you obviously pulled from some real life experience.
Yeah. When I first wrote it, it was pure memoir. It was nonfiction memoir, and I wrote it in 45 days. I never wanted to write a book. I wasn't interested in it, but my husband kept saying, you know, you have these stories and we were working on a show, developing a show for television about sex and love addiction. And what was happening when we were pitching it and people were interested, they kept changing the narrative. Honestly, it was a bunch of men changing the narrative. And I was getting so frustrated. My husband just looked at me and he said, listen, there's this writing class and I think it would be great for you. And I was looking at him. I was shooting Lucifer and I was like, what are you talking about? I have ADHD. I'm dyslexic. I am not a writer. Leave me alone. I'm an actor. Leave me alone. But he kept mentioning it over a month period. And finally I said, okay, I'll take it. And I wrote it in 45 days and it just came out. It was like a higher power, God, universe, whatever you want to call it, just was like, get these stories out. And then when I kept rewriting with my editor, all these other, my imagination, people's other stories, past stories I'd forgot about, you know, changing the name, changing the location so I can never get sued. And it just became this other person that was me, but was other people. And I was sitting there, you know, at my desk, and all of a sudden on Pandora, Roxanne from The Police came on. And I was like, that's it. It's Roxanne. Everybody's got some Roxanne in them. And so I wrote it for everybody. I really wanted to put the full spectrum of what sex and love addiction is and this first year of recovery looks like and all the things you wonder, like, why does an addict do that? And like, you get in the addict's mind and you see the train of thought and why they do the things they do and how they stop doing them, that whole process. So I just really wanted to, it was, a friend told me that in the program that it was like a long share. Like, it's just a long share.
That's honestly how it felt. I mean, it felt conversational. And, you know, I keep using the word fun because I'm like, I'm reading about these. Like, I feel like if it was written by a different person, it could have been dark.
Yes.
But I'm also like, but I was laughing, you know, I'm yes. laughing along with Roxanne and I'm like visualizing her going through these shenanigans. And it's, like I said, it's so refreshing to see that perspective because sex and love addiction is often just so portrayed as super serious of, you know, like the show, the movie, Thanks for Sharing.
Oh, yeah.
Shame. The Netflix show Love. I loved Love. Mm-hmm. What did you think of Love?
I didn't love it because there was there were certain moments that weren't realistic to the rooms and when I watched people go through recovery. And again, it was felt like it was still through, even though it was a female character and a male character. I just felt like it went towards the male character more than the in-depth of looking at what a female sex and love addict goes through. And that's the narrative I want to put out in the world is like, yes, this is, people think it's a man's problem, but there's 50% of the people in the room are women. And I just felt like it didn't really do the work to get into what the nitty gritty is. It still was about two people falling in love with all their quirks and stuff. And really what the program is about is not about falling in love with somebody. It's falling in love with yourself. So I just felt like it was still a fairy tale, you know, ending situation. And Shame, I really love Shame because that's how dark it gets. And that happens to Roxanne. It happened to me. You go to a very, very dark place. I mean, when you hit your bottom, it's the worst of the worst. And so I wanted to show that. But when you're getting healthier, it's funny. You know, people come in and laugh at like the worst things and crack up about them. So there is a lightness to look at these things you do and make humor about it. So that was just really important to me to give the full spectrum that you laugh at Roxanne with Roxanne because I laugh at myself. Like the shit I did is just like mind-blowing. I can't believe I did what I did all those years for 20 plus years.
Do you think that's what inspired you telling your own story through Roxanne because they're – you saw misrepresentation in a lot of other existing forms of storytelling?
Yeah, I mean, that's the only reason. If you watch any TV show or Dateline, at least one character in the program or the show is a sex and love addict. They never say they're obsessed with love. They're obsessed with finding their soulmate or kill or murder somebody over something. If you listen to any love songs, it's people, unrequited love, blah, blah, blah. Literally the entire world. So I just, every character I've played to, I'm like, she's a sex and love addict. And then, so I just got tired of that narrative that we are not talking about this issue that is destroying our society, especially with the availability of porn, especially with social media, looking, swiping left and right, the filtered images. We're all in fantasy wanting this shiny object to complete us. And nobody's talking about it. They said it's probably going to be an epidemic for this generation coming up, that they are having a hard time. They've desensitized their brains in sexuality, and they can't connect connection, sexuality, and intimacy. Like, it's actually kids, young kids are coming into the rooms at 19 and 20 saying, I don't know how to have a healthy relationship. And that to me is tragic. So that's why I spoke out. That's why I wrote that HuffPost article, you know, a year and a half ago saying, hey, I struggle with intimacy. I struggled having a healthy relationship. I struggled finding myself and my self-worth. And here I am on the other side. There is a way out. I mean, that's really the only reason I wrote the book, is to help people, honestly.
I know that feeling.
Yeah. I mean, it's not about me. People can write about me and say I'm this and that, a slut. I just use my looks, my job, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I've heard it all. You can say whatever you want. But the only, I was happy, you know, 10 years of recovery, helping my community, speaking all over the world, going to recovery centers. But this thing came over me where it was like, no, you got to go bigger. It was like out of my control. I had no control over it. I was like, okay, I guess this is where you're taking me to be of service on a bigger level.
I think that's right. I mean, I know for me, and I think given the nature of, you know, what you experienced was probably mm-hmm. similar, which was that I felt so alone in it. I felt like it was only me. Yeah. And then, you know, sort of learning that, you know, the first time I walked into a recovery meeting, I'm like, oh my God, here are people with my brain. They think like me, there's relief, there's something. And, you know, it's not just me. And then it was, you know, I really just want to, if somebody else can avoid what I went through, I want to help them do that.
Yeah. And someone said, like, we get addicted to the rooms or get addicted to service. And it's like, no, I'm not addicted to service. Service is what keeps me sober. Service is what gets me out of self. Service is, and this is just how I'm being of service now, is on a bigger level instead of just sponsoring in my smaller community. It's like, when I walked into those rooms and I saw 30 people that looked nothing like me, every ethnicity, sexual orientation, religion, age range, like every single, you know, I'm looking at an A-list celebrity, a CEO, a social worker, an elementary school teacher, a homeless person, every single type of person. And they all said something I felt, thought, or had done. And that was the first moment I'm like, oh my God, I am not alone and I am not broken. And I just want to give other people those experiences. And then on the other side of it, I've helped a lot of people that are with sex addicts or sex and love addicts, trying to help them see that they could be the most perfect individual and it doesn't matter. You cannot fix a sex and love addict. You cannot make those people love you. And I just had a DM from a woman that listened to my audiobook for 8.5 hours. She's driving across country. And she just left me 5 DMs saying, oh my God, my husband that I was with for 15 years did the same thing. And now I'm actually praying for him that he gets help because I still love him, even though he gave me an STD and he hurt me. But now I see that had nothing to do with me. And that's why I wrote it. To help on both sides of this disease.
Yes, it gives such insight to people who are living with it, not in their own, not themselves, but with somebody, and they just can't figure out what is wrong and what that means.
Yeah, I mean, people say, you know, maybe I'll get bigger boobs. Maybe if I look like this, he'll love me or she'll love me. Maybe if I make more money. And it's like, no, none of that is going to ever make them love you enough to stop acting out.
I'm so glad you brought that up about the other person, because it's not about us. And it mm-hmm. like addiction always impacts everyone around you, whether we realize it or not. And especially sex and love addiction, it is directly impacting us. Like if you're in a long-term relationship and your partner is struggling with sex and love addiction, there's shame for that partner too.
Oh yeah.
Because people don't think sex and love addiction is real for the person who's struggling with it, let alone you tell someone that your partner is a sex addict and you're going through this thing. People aren't taking you seriously.
No, they're looking at you and going, why is she cheating on you? Something must be wrong with you.
Why are you staying with them?
Yeah. Why are you staying with them? Why are you putting up with this? Blah, blah, blah. And it's like, because there is so complex, it doesn't just one or two things. And, you know, I tell couples that are together that are dealing with this, don't jump out of the relationship right away. See what's underneath. And then if that sex and love addict doesn't get help, then yes, I advise get out of the relationship. But normally it's something deeper for both people. Why did you pick that person that's actually unavailable? Let's look at that. But on also when you said it affects people, and this is another reason I spoke out, it's that ripple effect, right? Like you throw a stone and it ripples out. When I was acting out in my disease, doing the worst of the worst, which is all in the book, which is totally embarrassing. But when it ripples out, and I realized how many people I hurt, you know, a boyfriend I did horrible things to, then did something horrible to another girl. Then they had kids, then they weren't available for their kids, and it ripples out. And now I'm trying to do the ripple effect. If like I can help one person heal, then that person won't hurt the next person, and so on and so on. So it's that ripple effect we don't realize.
Yeah. Do you refer people, do you suggest to people who are with somebody who is in the disease to go to Al-Anon?
Yeah, I definitely recommend people to go to Al-Anon. I recommend the partners sometimes to go to the love addiction side. There's pure meetings for love addiction. But the number one thing I say is just talk to somebody that has experience, strength, and hope, or a therapist. You don't have to be in a 12-step program. That worked for me. You know, I did 8 years of intense therapy twice a week. I, you know, did the 12 steps. It took me 9 years to do the 12 steps. I don't recommend everybody. Everybody doesn't fit in a group, but you can find groups online of people that are with people that are sex and love addicts. You can go to therapy. You can look at yourself, because that's the only thing you have control over. You got to look at yourself. Like, why am I staying in this relationship? What do I have to do to give myself that self-worth? And do I need to stay or go? But it's those things we have to look at. It's just not cut and dry where you're like, see ya, peace out.
Right, right. And there is support to be had in experiencing that and going through it.
Exactly.
So Brianne, you are on Recovery Rocks. So you know that means we got to talk about music for a minute before before we bounce. Is there, you know, maybe a song or an album or, you know, any form of, you know, pop culture, whatever, that means something to you in the context of what we've been talking about today?
I mean, I do a whole playlist for Roxanne in the back of my book. I literally made a playlist that she listened to through every situation. And when I was writing the book, I wrote while I was listening to music. I'm a huge music person. I listen to lyrics. And my favorite for sex and love addiction songwriter is Noah Cyrus. I know she's not like mainstream, but her song July and Sadness and really hit on sex and love addiction, you know, being in therapy, going back to that unavailable person. She really sings a lot about this disease and when she found, you know, her Jesus and stuff like that. So she would be some person. And I love the Avett Brothers. I just love them so much. I'm a huge, every time I hear them, it just like I and love and you and that song I love. And
that song guts me.
Know which one really guts me is No Hard Feelings. Like I will listen to oh my God, it's like to your core, like the best song I have ever heard. If I can live my life like No Hard Feelings song by the Avett Brothers, I will live a beautiful, serene existence.
Well, I feel like that's the perfect place to end this.
Yes, yes.
So, Brianne, how can people find you and your amazing TikToks and your book and all of the things and your work? I mean, you've got movies out, you've got shows, you've got so much.
Yeah. If you want to follow me, go to @TheBrianneDavis on Instagram. I try to answer all my DMs and help, you know, send you to Zoom, send you to the 40 questions, send you, you know, get help. So reach out if you need help. The other thing is my TikTok is @The.BrianneDavis. And then if you're interested in the book or any of the articles I've written or shows I've been on, talk shows I've been on talking about sex and love addiction, go to secretlifenovel.com and everything is there. The Amazon link for the book and signed copies and all that.
And you also, your podcast, Secret Life.
Yes, which you're on. I can't wait.
I'm on an episode where we talk about rage. So That's super fun. But it's a cool concept for a podcast of, you know, people come on to talk about a secret. And sometimes it's a person anonymous. Sometimes it's a a person. I was myself on it.
Yeah.
But it's just a cool place for people to talk about secrets and just kind of remove shame. I feel like that's just been the steady theme of this whole conversation.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's the moment I released that last bit of shame when I wrote that HuffPost article. And it just gave me the sense of like, oh, I'm really living my authentic life. And that's why I did Secret Life, is letting other people come on, tell their past shame or their present shame and secrets, you know, from, you know, committing them a suicide attempt, shotgun in the chest and surviving, you know, using abortion as a form of birth control, body shame images for men, you know, gambling addictions, deading. I mean, we have all walks of life with every kind of secret. We have 51 episodes out and about 75 still in the can. So we're going to be doing it for at least two and a half years of secrets and shame, just letting it go.
Well, we love talking about secrets and shame and getting them the F out. So thank you so much, Brianne, for hanging out with us today.
Thank you, Brianne.
Thank you, ladies. It was so fun.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And for more from us, you can find me at LisaSmithAdvisory.com. And I'm on social at Girl Walks Out. Tawny, how can we find you?
You can find me literally everywhere, Lisa. My social media is Tawny M. Lara. My website is TawnyLara.com. And we want to give a huge shout out to our sponsor, Sober Dating. Don't forget to pre-order and get your 6 months free to use this amazing Sober Dating app that's literally called Sober Dating. And we also just want to remind you, it's super helpful if you can rate and subscribe, leave any comments, let us know how the podcast resonates with you. Thank you so much.
We always love to hear from you.
Yes.
See you all again soon.